Hour number two of Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5. The Game, Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Ryan Porth taking you through this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Going to have Casey Alexander, Belmont basketball coach, join us at 7:45. And then, of course, Charles Robinson, our man from Yahoo Sports, joins us at 9 o'clock as he does each and every Tuesday. So looking forward to that. Joe, we asked the question before the break. What have we made so far of the Titans' offense in three games without Taylor Lewan? Now, two of those games, they've gone up against very good defenses, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and then just a disaster of a game, really, for the Titans as a whole in that game against Cincinnati. But absolutely fair to say that the offense has not been as productive as they were when Taylor Lewan was in the lineup. As you watch Ryan Tannehill and company operate offensively, what have you noticed in the three games without Lewan out there?
We've talked about some of it. I mean, they've had to do more to protect. So one of the questions on that is how much of that is matchup based? I mean, to me, and I don't have snap-by-snap counts, I think there was more of that against the Steelers, and I think there was more of that against the Bears than there was against the Bengals. But, of course, you have to compensate for that. I mean, you have to compensate for your $80 million left tackle being out. And so I think that that has hurt them some, but I also think that Tannehill's been affected a little bit by it in terms of, you know, just making some plays, getting the ball out a little bit faster, at times not letting things develop, and then at times, you know, he's forced some passes. He almost had a couple picked early in that game against the Bears. Then eventually he throws that TD to Brown, and they had the drive to put him up 24-3. He had a few terrific passes on that drive. But I think it's affected him some. I think there were times this year, even with the protection, which was great. I mean, I think they gave up three sacks in the first five games. There were times where I couldn't believe how well he stood in there. Eventually, you know, the pressure's going to come, and he stood in and stood in and stood in. And if you can do that, you're going to have open people downfield. And those days are – it doesn't look like that anymore.
Yeah.
So it's who you're playing, and it's who you have in the field. And, you know, this week, you know, Jahmyr Douglas came in, and again, a tough spot for a lineman to come in and, you know, have to fill in. In the middle of a game against a really good defense, they seemed fine. But for a whole game, if they have Jahmyr Douglas out there and Tyson Brailo, you go from Lewan and Saffold to Douglas, Sombrilo. That's a big difference.
It's a big difference. And I think to that point, you know, Saffold was a limited participant yesterday in practice. So I guess good news on that front. That
a hypothetical.
Just, yeah, hypothetical limited participant. So I'd say would still probably be very much in question for the game on Thursday, but at least the fact that they designated him as a limited participant, hypothetically speaking, I guess is good news for the long-term prognosis of Roger Saffold there.
It's a glimmer of hope. It also could be, you know, we don't want the Colts. I mean, we'll see. Today is the one day of open practice. I think it's later today. Everything's all pushed back. I mean, the coordinators talked today and everything. So I think it's like 2 o'clock. But, yeah, that would be big. You know, the hope, of course, when Saffold left the field, okay, maybe it's a stinger. But, you know, you take him out of there, the run game suffers.
Yeah.
And certainly that whole left side now.
It's completely different.
It's completely different. So it's going to impact your offense. There's no way around it. But the good news, at least on the Saffold front, is it's not a long-term shoulder thing if he's out there, if he's a limited guy right now.
We had former Titans GM and co-host of Jared and the GM, Floyd Reese, on with us earlier in the show and asked him what he's seen out of the offense through three games without Taylor Lewan. Here's what Floyd Reese had to say. Floyd, it's been three games now without Taylor Lewan on the offensive line. What have you made of the offense as a whole so far without Lewan in the mix?
You know, I'm not sure if we are stuck. I mean, you noticed at points in time in the game, you know, where you're only running a two-man route. Well, that doesn't help Ryan. Ryan's forte, in my opinion, is getting the five guys out and letting him have the option of who you want to throw the ball to. Well, when you only have a couple of guys in the route and you've got four guys in coverage, well, they can double both those guys, take those guys away. Now where is Ryan and what he can do? I'm thinking a bunch of that must stem from the fact that, you know, as I talked about Chicago, we're still a little bit hesitant with this offensive line, and that, you know, we're more along the lines of, okay, let's be sure we protect Tannehill.
So that was Floyd Reese earlier in the show talking about what he's seen out of the offense with Lawan's absence. And a guy I think that's been really affected so far about Lawan's or from Lawan's absence has been Jonnu Smith. And you take a look at his last three games, two receptions on Sunday for 32 yards. Now, he did have a touchdown against Cincinnati, two receptions for 29 yards. Against Pittsburgh, one reception for 9 yards. So not a lot of production, not a lot of opportunities for Jonnu Smith in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, here's the advanced stat of, like, routes run for him would be interesting now.
Yeah.
And it's almost like when it was 17-3, the Bears finally got on the board, and they were like, all right, can we let Jonnu go run some pass routes? Boom, boom, he gets in the end zone. They go up 24-3, and they're, okay, now you're back in protecting Jonnu. Thank you. And, of course, now you got Mykole Pruitt hurt. That's another thing with this offense. Mykole Pruitt is not a guy who's going to get a lot of attention, but he's a terrific blocker. I mean, he has carved out a role in the NFL. Again, this is another practice squad guy. Actually, Southern Illinois alum, all-time leading receiver, as Corey Curtis will tell us. It's Southern, or maybe for tight ends, but either way, a very productive pass catcher. High pick, hasn't worked out, found a blocking role here, but also a guy who can catch the ball at times, but certainly a guy you can leave in, feel good about him protecting. Big part of the run game. Now you take him out. You know, if you go from last game, you start that game with Saffold and Pruitt, and you don't have him in this game, that's another tough break against a really good defense.
It is, and to that point, you look at the running game, especially with Derrick Henry, and I'm not sure, like, the absence of Taylor Lewan has had a huge effect on that. Like, Pittsburgh, a very good rush defense, and what did Henry end up with? 20 carries, 75 yards in that game and a touchdown, and to your point, late in that game, kind of got rolling against that Steelers defense running the ball. Cincinnati, had the Titans defense helped them out at all offensively in that game, Derrick Henry could have run for 250 yards in that game, and he was running all over the Bengals in that game. And then Chicago last week obviously took Derrick Henry a while to get going, had one big run on the touchdown drive to put him up 24-3, but that was basically it for Derrick Henry. So two games against really good defenses where the running game has taken a little while to get going, and one game against Cincinnati where they could have done whatever they wanted to running the ball, just didn't have an opportunity. But I haven't noticed a huge drop-off with some Brilo in there in the running game part of this.
Yeah, I think, look, Lawan is paid what he's paid because he's a left tackle who's a great pass protector, but he's also really athletic, so I think there are some plays he can make in the run game that not many tackles can make, and those probably have had something to do with some of the bigger runs even. But, yeah, Sombrilo, I think, has been very good as a run blocker from what we've seen. So, again, though he's also next to that guy who is – and what did Sombrilo tell us last week? Saffold's like Khalil Mack at his position.
Yeah.
I was like, that's an interesting – quite a statement. But certainly as a run blocker, he's a guy who, if you're putting together run-blocking pancake tapes, like Roger Saffold every year is going to have several entries in there. So if you take him out, you know, for this game, you're trying to establish a run against that defense. Arthur Smith may have to get quite creative this week.
Yeah. This comes from our certified statistician, Ryan Porth. Titans offense in the first five games with Taylor Lewan in the mix, 32.8 points per game on average. The last three games without Taylor Lewan, just 22.6 points per game. So a 10-point drop-off, basically, without Lewan in there. Now, defensively, a couple of those teams have been stout
right. That
they've gone up against. So you have to keep that in mind, but certainly a drop-off in the offensive production.
Yeah, those first five opponents included the Vikings, the Texans, the Jaguars, who are brutal defensively. So then you add Steelers and Bears to the last three, so that's part of it too. But I think Lawan is part of it for sure. And it's you just got to be a little bit more creative, and you've got to maybe sometimes move the pocket, things like that. I mean, this week is tough. Then they have extra time for the Ravens. The Ravens are I mean, that's a heck of a defense, you know. Yeah. So they've got. I mean, it's amazing. You think about this stretch ahead, really, for both of these teams. You got Colts, Ravens, Colts. Colts have Titans, Packers, Titans, and they're both coming off the Bears and the Ravens, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about the grinder right now for these teams.
It is, and I still think with the Titans specifically, when you look at this team, you feel like offensively that's still going to have to be the area that leads them. And you're still going to have to score, you know, 27, 30, 33 points a game to win. Now, maybe not in this game Thursday. I mean, Indy's offense, I don't think, really terrifies anyone. So maybe this game's a little bit different. But when you go and play Baltimore, I mean, you're going to have to score some points to win that game. Are you confident that this offense, as presently constructed, and let's just say for the sake of argument that Saffold's in there, can they still do that, in your opinion, and get to that level where they're scoring 30 points a game?
I don't know. I mean, the Ravens are different. You know, the Ravens, it's almost like the Ravens have loaded up because of what happened. And, you know, actually, you could look at the Colts, too. And, like, Darius Leonard had a kind of down year last year. I mean, DeForest Buckner is a guy they were like, okay, we can play some defense now with him, free up some of our other guys. Because remember, Derrick Henry just ran all over them in that second half. They were up 10 points in that game. Derrick Henry just took over the game in Indy. So both of these teams, I think, have adjusted personnel-wise to, in part, not just for the Titans, obviously, but they're better equipped to stop Derrick Henry. So this running game is really going to get a test. And I think, you know, I think Saffold's probably going to be fine for that game after the extra rest. But the Titans could use probably even an 80% Saffold Thursday night.
Going back to our conversation last segment about who's faster between Phillip Rivers and Nick Foles, we've got a text on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. A texter says, Foles and Rivers are so slow, it takes them an hour and a half to watch 60 minutes. It's pretty good.
Nice. I like that one.
Very nice. You know who's not slow? Ryan Tannehill. He's a very fast quarterback, very mobile quarterback. What have we made of Ryan Tannehill specifically in the last three games without Taylor Lewan? Are we worried that his production seems to be slipping a little bit? We'll get to that on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Ryan, early on in the game, it looked like some of the passes that you were letting go of were a little bit high. How were you able to adjust and get that under control? And it also seemed like that there was a couple of drops. So how were you able to get back in a rhythm and overcome that?
Yeah, the only one I felt like was high was the one AJ caught. Made a good play on it and then finished off with a great run. So I didn't really think it was a problem. Obviously, I'd like to have that one a little bit down, but it wasn't like a consistent problem. But yeah, you mentioned so just not finishing plays, whether it's the throw, the catch, the block. We just had too many missed opportunities overall on offense today, so we need to clean those things up. We have a good team coming to town on Thursday, so I have to get it cleaned up in a hurry.
That was Titans quarterback Ryan Tannehill after the game Sunday and the win against the Bears. And an interesting day for Tannehill and the offense on Sunday, Joe. 10 of 21 for Ryan Tannehill. Finishes with 158 yards, two touchdowns in the game. And we were talking last segment about the offense as a whole without Taylor Lewan in there. One of the interesting things to me when you evaluate Tannehill specifically without Lewan, I'll read off some completion percentages to you with Lewan in there the first five games. 67%, 75%, 62%, 75%, and 73%. Those are the completion percentages for Ryan Tannehill through the first five games with Lewan in. Since he's been out, 60% against Pittsburgh, 60% against Cincinnati, 47% against Chicago. So not quite as accurate with the football since Lewan has been out. Now, obviously, you could point to pressure. You could point to maybe not having as many targets, which we've talked about in terms of maybe leaving some guys in the chip or to help protect and pass protection. What have you made of Ryan Tannehill specifically in three games without Lewan?
You also talk about at least, what, three drops the other day?
Yes.
At least three, for sure. But that's still what gets him into the 50s. Yeah, I mean, I think it's, again, I think it's these, I have not seen early in the season, there were a lot of plays. There were a few plays every game where it was almost amazing how much he would stand in there, which means the other team had a good coverage on, and he was able to just look around the field and pick out somebody. And you know, like some of these, there was an A.J. Brown touchdown where, you know, he drags across the entire field and he finally hits him as he's about to go in the end zone. Like it takes forever to get to the point where you can throw that pass. And that's not happening anymore. So I think it's protection and it's knowledge of what your protection is. Not that Ryan Tannehill is doing the, you know, seeing ghosts thing. He's not Marcus Mariota or anything like that. But you got to know the reality of the situation, which is who you don't have and then who you're going against. And I think you've seen that impact him some. And I can't blame him for it. I mean, he still has been able to step in and make good throws, but it certainly doesn't look as lethal as it did before.
Yeah, and, you know, from a pressure standpoint, and I know sacks, I mean, they don't tell the whole story, but the first three games, Tannehill was sacked three times total. Actually, the first four games, he was sacked three times total. Then LaJuan goes down in the Houston game, and he's pretty much immediately sacked by J.J. Watt, fumbles the ball. So since the Houston game, he's been sacked eight times. And obviously, LaJuan being out, that's the first thing you point to of, all right, there have been some times where, whether it's been J.J. Watt, or, you know, T.J. Watt or Khalil Mack or all these different players that have been out there. Yes, the pass rush has been a challenge and certainly been going up against higher quality pass rush in at least two of the past 3 weeks. But you can see some areas in pass protection where they're having some issues or at least more issues than they were to start the season. And I think you're starting to see that maybe the clock in Tannehill's head speed up at times, and maybe at times speed up quicker than it probably should. And we haven't seen that a ton from Tannehill since he's taken over as starting quarterback.
Yeah, there's a couple times for sure where, you know, it actually holds, but he's getting out. I mean, I think the third, it was third and, you know, long-ish, and he throws that out cut. I think it was it to Corey Davis? I think so.
Yeah.
It was kind of predetermined, get it out right now. And, I mean, that was red all the way, and that's a pick. I think he's probably thrown about three of those since LaJuan has gone out that were like that, where it was get the ball out, telegraphed. They're totally on top of what you're trying to do, and the pick didn't happen, but it could have happened.
With Fuller, I think was, yeah.
Fuller
Kyle
the other
Fuller.
Day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's in some weeks ahead, it won't be as noticeable because they'll be playing the Texans again. They get to play the Jaguars again. They get to play the Lions. But against these top teams, and this is what you want to do in the playoffs, and, you know, in the playoffs, you gotta figure it out against those really good defenses. And so, again, I think some of it is also Arthur Smith can ease the burden a little bit. You know, some bootlegs if you need to move the pocket, things like that. I mean, the screen game really hasn't worked at all for them this year. You know, those screens, which were so good last year, teams clearly have diagnosed those. But there's some things, you know, you're going to have to probably get creative, especially in this game and the next three games against these two teams. You're going to have to really come up with some stuff to try to make up for the what you are lacking right now.
It is interesting to me, though, like we're having this discussion right now about Tannehill's performance maybe falling off a little bit, and you look at the numbers the last three games, you know, 18 of 30, 220, two touchdowns against Pittsburgh, 18 of 30, 233, two touchdowns, one pick against Cincinnati, and 10 of 21, 158, two touchdowns, no picks against Chicago. So he's got six touchdowns, one interception during that frame, like in years past. And I, as president of the Marcus Mariota Hater Club, this would be like career games for him. I'd be like, yeah, he's looking really good out there. It's great.
Right. But we were also talking about Tannehill for MVP not long ago, right?
Yeah.
And we're not really talking about that anymore.
Not really.
Those numbers are not, you're making an MVP push, you know? And maybe it was inevitable that the numbers weren't going to stay outrageous like they had been early. But, yeah, though, it's still, he's still playing well. I mean, again, last game, the TD pass to A.J. Brown and the drive to go up 24-3, those two things alone, that's pretty much what he did.
Yeah.
The rest of the day, it felt like the Bears just had the ball all day mucking it up and making us watch a terribly boring football game. But Tannehill gave you winning plays. And to me, in this game Thursday, if you compare these teams, he's why, to me, the Titans are the better team and the team that's favored.
And if you get him some protection, and I think to what Floyd said earlier, maybe trusting your line a little bit more to open up some of those options for him, because I agree. I think having, you know, having Tannehill sit back and be able to go through his progressions, go through his reads, and decide where he's going to throw the ball and have multiple options, that's what's made the passing game really good. I mean, we talked about, you know, other than A.J. Brown, there's really not a guy that goes out there week in and week out and puts up, you know, you can count on this guy getting 8 catches a game. You can count on this guy getting 5 catches a game. It doesn't really happen with this offense because they spread the ball around so much, and they haven't been able to do that. Now, I do think Sunday specifically, not having Adam Humphries in there was a big deal because he's the type of guy to me, especially when you're going up against a pass rush like Chicago, if you're trying to get the ball out in a hurry, a guy that's so shifty and can move quickly in the slot like that, you really need a guy like that against Chicago. So if they could get him back at some point, maybe this week against Indianapolis or maybe as early as next week, that will be huge because I think they really missed him on Sunday.
I agree. That's an underrated thing. We're focused on Saffold this week and Clowney and Adoree Jackson, but Humphries is a big deal. Obviously, concussion against Cincinnati, missed last week. He was listed as out on the hypothetical walkthrough practice report yesterday with concussion. So today is a big day on that front for him if he's able, if he's gotten through all the protocols. But yeah, I guess my guess would be look for him against the Ravens. Without him, you know, Firkser is a guy who kind of steps into that slot role sometimes, and Tannehill has a lot of confidence in him.
And he did not have a good game.
Yeah, I mean, couple times he just dropped passes, pretty good coverage, close coverage, but passes he usually catches. So, but he'll keep going to him. And Firkser is a guy who is one to watch Thursday too, but especially if Humphries is out.
Yeah, and I'm not worried about Ryan Tannehill. I know there's been some conversation about maybe him sailing a few balls the last few games. I watch him play, and I don't see like this reoccurring problem with him out there. I think he's going to be fine. I do think there have been times, like I said, where maybe he's speeding up a little bit more than he should. But also, I mean, there have been times where he's just gotten crushed back there on Sunday against the Bears. So that's going to happen when you start playing some of these teams. But, like, if Ryan Tannehill goes out on Thursday against the Colts and throws for 3 touchdowns and 275 yards and the Titans win, that's not going to surprise me. Like, it's not going to come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I still think Ryan Tannehill's playing pretty well.
Well, and he may have to throw it quite a bit Thursday. Obviously, the Titans hope to play from ahead in this game, and I think their defense can be fine in this game, but I don't know if they're going to be able to run the ball all that well.
It's going to be tough.
And the Colts are – it's like the Bears. They had terrible rush defense numbers going last week, but you knew the personnel they had. And again, it's like how many weeks of going into these games have the Bears cared about stopping the run? Have they really focused on it, right?
Yeah.
When teams play the Titans, they know what they have to do first, and the Colts know that, and they are equipped to stop it. So I think it's a big week for Arthur Smith here. It definitely is. With the personnel issues, we don't know the extent of those, but you know he's missing some people, and he's got a really good defense coming in here in a short week, and I'll be interested to see what kind of stuff he dials up. I think we'll probably see some unique things.
And this is such a massive game for the Titans, like especially in terms of league-wide, like Thursday night football games. Typically, they come on and you're like, oh, God, Thursday night football. This one is huge. Like, Titans win this game, you got a 2-game lead in the division. I mean, that is a massive, massive step. With, like you said, I mean, you got the Ravens next week. That's going to be tough. Then you go back and play the Colts again. But the Colts have the Packers, and then they come back and play you. You get a win in this game, that goes a long way to me in terms of winning this division.
You think the country's excited about this game?
I don't know about that. Excited? What do you mean excited?
Well, like, I mean, like, does the NFL community, are they like, oh, good, Colts, Titans? I would hope so.
I think in terms of Thursday night football matchups, yes.
Yeah.
Because I think there is, like, a stigma that goes along with it of, man, Thursday night football. It's just crap matchup after crap matchup.
And you know why they're excited?
Why's that?
And this is a rare occurrence, I would say, just in general when these two teams play, because the Titans have people they want to watch.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
AJ Brown. Usually the Colts have the people they want to watch. The Titans have the people they want to watch.
You don't want to watch Phillip Rivers chuck that ball up?
No, I mean,
shot put style.
I do want to see. I'm rooting for some sort of scoop and score or scoop or interception, so we can see him play defense again. That would be fun.
Another reason why this game is so big is that it's at home.
Yeah,
and if you lose this game, not only have the Colts tied you in the division, you have to go to their place in 2 weeks and try to win there in a place where you don't have a lot of success over the years, even though they won there last year.
Right.
And just to split with the Colts this year.
Yeah, but I think you can throw all that out the window this year. Like, just with the way the crowds are, like, going to a place doesn't really mean anything to me this year, other than just the protocol. You have to go through the travel, I guess.
Yeah, it doesn't mean as much for sure. Titans have 5 of the last 7 on the road, so they hope it doesn't mean as much. But still, yeah, I mean, I think it's a decent atmosphere. It was a pretty good, you know, again, you can't create the noise that you're used to creating. But like the other day, it was a pretty good atmosphere for that game. Mostly Titans fans, and I imagine it'll be pretty good Thursday night. So yeah. You still want to take advantage of that.
You do. But what I'm saying is, it's not like you're walking into Indy and like you're going to have to go to like a silent count. Like, you'll be okay.
Right.
You can snap the ball.
Yes, that's true.
As a Packers fan, it's been a lot of fun to watch Aaron Rodgers on the road this year. Draw people offside. It's been great.
Always comes back to Aaron Rodgers, doesn't it?
It's a character flaw of mine. I'm sorry. When we come back, some good news for the Tennessee Volunteers. And no, I am not talking about the football team. We'll discuss what I'm getting to next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 102.5 The Game and ESPN 94.9 is your exclusive home for the 2020 Masters Tournament. Tune in to 102.5 The Game for leaderboard updates this Thursday and Friday, and then on Saturday and Sunday, ESPN 94.9 will broadcast the Masters live both days. It's all brought to you by Music City Golf Store in Belle Mead for all your golfing needs. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, and Ryan Porth taking you through this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Belmont basketball coach Casey Alexander will join us in the next segment, so looking forward to catching up with Casey during that time. But Joe, this is starting to become your time of the year. You are a big college basketball guy. You love it. You are to college basketball what the Mandalorian is to me, just pure love at all times.
Wow.
Is that a fair description?
I do love college basketball. By the way, I'm glad you brought up The Mandalorian, because it's been 2 episodes?
2 episodes.
How is it?
It's pretty good.
Yeah? Because my son, my oldest, who is the biggest Star Wars fan in the family, said he heard that it was a little bit disappointing. So you're saying it's good?
Nah, first two have been pretty good.
Okay, good. I'm excited about that. But not as excited as I am about college basketball. Very excited.
College basketball. This is your time of year, baby. I love it.
I love all hoops. So
you know,
all hoops is good. College and pro. Might have some pro basketball around here too. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, it's exciting. Tennessee. Tennessee fans should be excited. Vanderbilt fans also. You know, Isaac McBride was cleared last night, so he is a Kansas transfer. So you're talking about real talented guard who is eligible. He transferred last year, but he had to go through the process of getting a waiver, and he's gotten it. So Jerry Stackhouse has another weapon. They're going to be interesting. The Tennessee ranked number 12 in the preseason AP poll. And I'm telling you, this team has a chance, if things all were to break right for this team, has a chance to make the program's first Final Four. Won't be favored to do so, but the pieces are there to be really, really good.
When you look at this team and Rick Barnes specifically and the job he's been able to do, like, you see some of these like recruiting lists come out, and as they're forecasting not only this class but some of the future classes they've got put together right now, and you see Tennessee in there with names like Duke and Kansas and Kentucky, and you're like, huh, don't remember seeing a whole lot of that in Tennessee basketball history. How has Rick Barnes been able to come in here and recruit at such a high level without really the postseason success that typically some of these teams that do that and recruit at that level are able to generate?
Yeah, well, wherever this program ends up, a lot of credit is going to have to go to Rick Barnes' early recruiting classes, which were absolutely just trashed when he signed them.
Yep.
You know? I mean, Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield. Schofield came in the year before him, but these recruiting classes were not highly ranked, and people were absolutely ripping them because it was like, okay, so this guy's got his retirement job, and this is what he's bringing in. And, of course, you're talking about SEC championship, guys who were in the NBA. I mean, first of all, that's a great sign of he can evaluate. It's not just like he's out saying, hey, need this five-star, need that five-star. When he was at Texas, we know he recruited tons of talent. You know, Kevin Durant and so on, DJ Augustine, all kinds of guys, Damian James, tons of talented players, TJ Ford at Texas. And now he's got it rolling that way with the Vols. I mean, Kennedy Chandler, for people, if you haven't seen, you know, footage of Kennedy Chandler, Memphis point guard, number 12 overall player, according to Rivals in 2021, coming in next year, this kid is electric. Point guard. He is going to be just so fun to watch. So that's moving forward. They continue to roll. But, of course, this year, you know, they have perimeter talent. They have more McDonald's All-Americans that they brought in. Last year they got Josiah James. He was hurt all year. I think he's going to be a good player this year. But you bring in Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer. You're talking about big-time recruits that basically everybody wanted to come in, 6'4", 6'5", wings, and that's really what they've been missing. And then you have six-year senior, or whatever he is, John Fulkerson, who actually looks bulked up. They put out some pictures, and Fulkerson, I did a piece on him this summer, and he was like, I'm eating every day, lifting every day. He actually looks different. He actually looks like he could push somebody around a little bit in the post.
I, too, am eating every day. I'm not quite doing the lifting every day part of this discussion, but eating, I have gotten down pat.
Yeah.
So we're very similar that way.
I said that, right? Eating every day?
You did.
Thank
say
you. That. Good job.
That's very Jeremy.
Crazy. Yeah, yeah. You got, you know, if you've got offense, trying to score some points.
Maybe you have to run.
To live as a human, you need to eat every day.
What I'm interested,
how about a lot? Eating a lot.
There
every
you
day.
Go. What I'm interested, like, specifically with Tennessee basketball, obviously the freshman class, very interested to see how well they do. But, like, Vescovi, he was such a good story last year. Offensively, he'll be fine. Can he play defense? Like, can he come back and defend at an SEC level? That was a pretty major weakness of his last year. If he can, and if he's gotten better there, I feel really good about how good this Tennessee basketball team could be, because I thought that was a major weakness they had while he was on the floor last year.
Yeah, no question. I mean, it's pretty amazing he came in how he did. And he comes in the first game and he has like 20 points or whatever. I mean, it's amazing he performed as well as he did. He's a terrific, you know, he's a terrific pick and roll point guard and shooter. But also, I think that maybe him off the ball a little bit is something that they need to do. He also has nicely bleached hair, which is interesting. But
you're going deep into the details here. Tennessee basketball team.
I mean, I just want
eating
to,
habits, their
yeah,
hair.
I'm here with all the information you need.
Is it kind of ugly though?
Would you like the chance?
I will
to
never
rip any more college people.
I will never say that again about another college kid. Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah.
But we haven't even talked about Eve Pons, by the way. Who's
yeah?
I mean,
pretty freakishly talented.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's a pro, and I thought he might go anyway, and he is going to be a monster this year. Enjoy him this year.
Yeah. So as college basketball as a whole, like, obviously the challenges going into it with COVID and everything there, it's different than football. Obviously you're not playing basketball outside, so, like, I think the contact tracing in terms of, you know, if you've got players that are testing positive – that's a big deal in basketball, because you would think the transmission rate of COVID, much higher chance in a basketball game indoors than it would be outside in a football game. How do you think this season's going to go in from a college basketball standpoint? Because, you know, putting every team in a bubble and just rolling from there, obviously not going to be able to happen. Going to be interesting to see how this works out for college basketball.
Well, and the thing is, they were talking about all these bubbles. They were really talking about, let's try to load up eight teams here and get a bunch of games in, and OVC tournament. You know, we'll talk to Casey Alexander next segment. I mean, I know that they had talked about even like conference season over X period of time. Put people in a hotel. You know, you got to do your schoolwork remotely and get all these games in and get your conference tournament in, and then unbubble, and then you bubble back up for the NCAA tournament. And that's not happening. They're playing games. And I mean, just the way things are going right now, I feel like every hour we get a new college football team that's having an issue or a game that has to be moved or canceled. So I think a lot of it is just the simple answer is what happens with the virus? Are things getting better or are they going to keep getting worse? Because if it's going to be like it is now, man, I've got to think there's going to be a lot of issues with college basketball.
What do you make of Jerry Stackhouse and the group that he's bringing in with Vanderbilt this year?
Well, I wish Saban Lee the best. He is absolutely an NBA. He can go out there athletically and compete with anyone. But I thought another year under Stackhouse would have been great for him, and it's not happening, and that's a big loss. But I still think that they can be, you know, I think they are going to be picked around last in the SEC, and I don't think they're an NCAA tournament team. But I do think that Stackhouse showed a lot in terms of coaching last year, and I think he really coached that team up and got the most out of them. And there are some interesting guys on this team. Certainly, Pippen is, as a sophomore, Scottie Pippen Jr. is a really nice player. I really like Dylan Dessou as a sophomore. I think he's a future star. Like Jordan Wright, too, as a sophomore. You know, what do they have inside? Cleavon Brown, fifth-year player. I think last year he was going to have a big year. I think watch out for him this year. And then they got some new guys, and we're just going to have to see with some of these new guys. But Isaac McBride is now eligible. And DJ Harvey, transfer from Notre Dame, guy they're really excited about, 6'6". They're an interesting team. It's so hard to know, but it's not like he's completely devoid of talent here.
Right.
I mean, I think they're going to be – and again, based on what he got out of them last year – does the extra time now, does that, make – how much difference does that make? How much does the wacky offseason not help in that way? I think they're going to be a lot better than probably most people around the SEC do.
And now just a couple weeks away from college basketball getting started here around the country. And to that point, Belmont basketball coach – Casey Alexander will join us next. Looking forward to that conversation with him. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth taking you through this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And we are pleased to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in Belmont basketball coach Casey Alexander. Casey, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. Good to hear you guys talking some hoops this morning.
Absolutely. So, Casey, college basketball season, as we mentioned, almost upon us. The journey to get here has been quite something, as you're well aware, but we've almost made it, my friend. We're right around the corner.
Yeah, it's nice to know we'll be tipping off here in a couple of weeks, God and coronavirus willing.
Yeah, so take us through that journey, Casey. I mean, we talked a few weeks ago about some of these scenarios, the ideas of some of these bubbles, even like extended, bubbles to get a conference season in and different tournaments and things like that. It's more conventional than that, but what has the process been like to get here?
Well, it's been a complete roller coaster as far as scheduling is concerned. The first shoe to drop was the NCAA delaying our season by 11 days. No, 15 days. We're supposed to start November 10th. They moved that back to November 25th. So naturally, you lose 3, 4, 5 games in that scenario. And then that really started, a domino effect of so many things. A lot of early season tournaments were altered or canceled. Schools started kind of reshuffling their own schedule to make it fit better with what their needs were. Everything became more regional. So, and it's honestly, it's still an ongoing process. I think by now most teams have their schedule set, but there's still plenty out there that are looking around and trying to put the last pieces together.
So how do you feel about things right now? Just even just the big picture of the virus in the country. I know a guy I used to cover, Tom Izzo, announced he was COVID positive yesterday. It feels like in college football, there's news all the time recently about teams having issues. How do you feel about, moving forward and being able to contain this and proceed with the season?
Yeah, I'll say this first. it's been a real life lesson for all of us. You know, perspective has changed significantly with as far as basketball is concerned. You know, coaches work hard to put schedules together, and at this point, we all just want to play games. You know, and ordinarily you'd be fearful of walking into a game without a player or players, but again, now we just want to play games. Let's just get our guys on the floor and play some games. And we know that it's going to be different than any other season. We know there are going to be disruptions. We've had more than our share of that already. And so we just, you know, take what comes our way, do the best job you can with what you've got, and make the most of it.
Belmont basketball coach Casey Alexander on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Casey, what do you make of the group that you've got heading into the season? Obviously, headline Nick Mazinski, Grayson Murphy, named preseason all-OVC players, guys that have done a whole lot of winning. What do you make of the group you've got heading into this season?
Our team's really interesting, and I like our team a lot. I mean, I feel like we have good enough players, good enough balance, good enough depth, you know, that we can play for championships like Belmont's used to doing. But our margin maybe is a little bit thinner than it has been. The loss of Adam Kunkel over the summer really affected our team. But we've got, especially when you talk about Grayson and Moose, those guys are fourth-year juniors. One interesting thing about our team is we have no seniors at all. You know, so you would think we're a young team, but we got a lot of guys that have been around for a long time. So we're excited about it. Our expectations are high, and we're ready to get going.
A guy I find really interesting and I know has a lot of ability and has had some tough times, another junior. You know, Caleb Hollander, 6'8", 235, a guy who really came out firing his freshman year, has had some ups and downs. How do you feel about Caleb coming into this season? Do you feel like, you know, he can kind of step into that four role for you, kind of a stretch four, and give you some of what he was giving you earlier in his career?
Yeah, I do, absolutely. And he's probably the main reason for our optimism at this point in time. He's had a great fall. He's playing with a lot of confidence. He's healthy. And it never was a matter of, you know, if he could do it, because he showed that he could do it in the first 15 games of his career in a pretty phenomenal way. But he's just battled a lot since that time. And then we had a guy, Tyler Scannon, last year that took a lot of those minutes. But Caleb is doing well. I think he'll be a really important piece to our team. You know, again, another one of those juniors. You know, I mentioned that we have five juniors, and all five of them will graduate in May. With an extra year of eligibility left. So we've got a pretty old team, even though we don't have any seniors.
Belmont basketball coach Casey Alexander on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Casey, we mentioned it a little bit earlier in the segment. We all know how unpredictable things can be in today's landscape. But to me, I look at the OVC this year, and it's shaping up to be one of the most competitive years we've seen in a long time. Would you agree with that? And what do you make of the conference as a whole heading into this year?
Yeah, that's the scary part for me. I feel good about our team, but I don't feel very good about how good the rest of it is, because it'll be stronger. The league on paper is stronger than it's been in some time. Murray State and Austin Peay have phenomenal teams. Penny's got a great group coming back at TSU. Eastern Kentucky finished fourth last year. They have everybody back. Yeah, Eastern Illinois finished fifth last year. They have everybody back. So I think it'll be a really competitive league race. Fun times in the OVC if you're a hoops fan.
And a guy I feel like, Casey, can separate you is Mazinski. Nick Mazinski, I remember the first time I saw him a couple years ago, I was like, you know, where are the Big Ten coaches here, you know, with Nick Mazinski? I mean, I feel like he's got obviously terrific skills around the basket, but is he extending his range? Is that something you look for with him, or how is he progressing as a player?
Well, it's a weapon he has. He's so good around the basket that we don't want to encourage him to extend his range too far. You know, he likes it out there more than he should. But he's a weapon that, you know, at our level especially. I mean, he's just a phenomenal player. He's got great hands. He scores the ball with either hand around the basket, over either shoulder. He's a great passer. He understands the game and how to play, and so. You know, a lot of our success for sure this season will rise and fall, you know, depending on how he plays. And he's ready for more of that load. You know, in his first two seasons at Belmont, he scored more points than anybody ever has before. So he's off to a great start. But maturity, a little bit more ownership, a little bit more, you know, alpha dog mentality, those things will all serve him and our team well.
And Casey, obviously Grayson Murphy, a terrific player overall, but one thing that stands out to me, especially at the guard position, his ability to rebound the ball. Is that something you can coach, or is that just something a guy naturally has and brings with him to the table?
Well, I'm going to take all the credit for that.
You should. I mean,
you know,
you should.
All coaching. You know, point guards that rebound like that, it's not good coaching. No, it's 100% Grayson Murphy and just his mentality and nose for the ball. I have nothing to do with it. You know, naturally, point guards, they don't have a lot of box-out responsibilities when it comes, especially on the defensive end. So he just turns and lets it rip and goes to get it. But what's amazing about him is, I mean, he'll come out of a crowd with it. You know, he'll immerse himself into post-play world, and he'll come out with the ball more times than not. So it's a great mentality to have, and he's obviously so important to our team.
So when you lose a guy like Adam Kunkel, a shooter and scorer of his caliber, do you look at it like, okay, that's X number of points, where are we getting it, you know, from player A, B, C? Do you look at it that way at all, or is that too simplistic? And who on this roster do you feel good about taking on at least some of that load?
Yeah, I think that's the most conventional way to look at it. I don't think it is quite that simple. And I think in our case, it'll be, you know, those points will be spread around throughout the roster. I think Murph can have a better year scoring the ball. You know, even Moose, if he's, you know, another point or two or three a game here and there. But a lot of our young guys, you know, that just developmentally been shepherds of the world. We've got Luke Smith, who sat out this past year. That'll really help us. Cale Pollender coming back. So it'll be replacement by committee. And I'm confident. I mean, we're going to score plenty of points. I don't think that's going to be the problem.
Belmont basketball coach Casey Alexander on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Casey, you mentioned all the different challenges that have come with getting ready for this season and the schedule changes, all of that things. How's your team responded to this? It's got to be tough for college kids to kind of have to adapt to all of these different things and have some uncertainty moving forward. How's your team responded to all this?
They've been awesome. You know, they've handled it like champions. But I tell you, just human nature for all of us. You know, I mean, when you get a setback after another setback after another setback after another setback, it's really tough mentally. And these guys, you know, this is a really important thing to them. They came to Belmont and they want to play high level Division I basketball, and they put a lot of time and effort into it. And so to see that stripped away, whether temporary, you know, because of COVID or quarantine or contact tracing or whatever, and then just the doubt of, you know, what the season's going to look like, it's a really, really difficult thing. But they're also young, resilient. They wake up each day thinking they own the day. And so that's a good attitude for them to have, and it's helped us get through this time.
So, Casey, I was really excited about the Orlando tournament, possibility of Belmont-Michigan State matching up. Obviously, all those tournaments down there kind of gone away. Is it, like, do you guys possibly get back in that, like, next year or down the road? Is there any discussion about, you know, some of the teams that were supposed to be involved this year being involved later?
It's such a high-profile tournament that we were waiting literally 4 years to play in with a high-caliber field. And those events at that level are, you know, they're generally booked contractually for at least a year, two, or three out. So hopefully we've talked about it. We want to play in it. They've said they'll get us back into it, but it won't be in the near future because they've already got those fields set for the next coming year. So that was a tough one. I mean, we were – to open up the season, you know, with that kind of a feel, with Gonzaga, the number one team by some estimations, and Michigan State, as you mentioned, and Auburn and Xavier, a lot of really good teams. That was a tough blow.
Belmont basketball coach Casey Alexander has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Casey, thanks so much for taking time to join us. We really appreciate it, and good luck over the next couple weeks here as things get rolling.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Casey. Absolutely. They got a chance to have a pretty good team this year. I know – he mentioned Austin Peay there. They're going to be pretty special as well, Murray State. But top three teams in the OVC, pretty high-level basketball this year.
Absolutely. Should be. Oh, no question. I mean, Terry Taylor is probably, you know, the player of the year favorite from Austin Peay. But, yeah, I mean, Nick Mazinski is awfully good. And a little bit more of that dog mentality he mentioned. I mean, he can dominate most nights in the OVC.
When we come back, some problems running rampant yesterday through the SEC. We'll discuss that on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rexrode live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.